Thanks, James, for that. Just in case I don't get a chance to say it to you, either because I have to pop off or you go, thank you for having me for this series. I've thoroughly enjoyed coming here and doing this with you. I'm actually a little bit sad that this is the final instalment for now. And I really hope that you've enjoyed it as much as I have. So I just wanted to say that up front. I also wanted to say, and this was completely unplanned, just on that prayer walk, that was really, really cool. I found myself looking at that large, vast, empty, incomplete shed that kind of looms, I can't think of another word for it, looms over in the corner. And the kind of the now but not yet, something that's there in anticipation of what will be, but it would be very easy to just kind of look at the emptiness and go, what a waste. Look at the incompleteness and feel discouraged, feel disparaged, feel disappointed. And so I just really hope that in this season that you're in, which can lead to those tendrils of disappointment creeping in as you look around, to just have a look at that and don't focus on the emptiness. Focus on the anticipation. The best is yet to come, guys. The best is yet to come. And part of our series is looking at how God can do impossible things, do phenomenal things through few, in this case, one. Let's get back to Jonah, though. So this is our final instalment. We've been looking at the mission at hand, the ways at which we abandon mission. We had a look in our first session at the way in which we can just refuse to do the work outright. Don't want to do it, don't want a part in it, and we walk away. And the way that God provokes us and calls us back. We looked at session two at like our apathy, that we can actually put our hand to the plow, but we do it in a way where we give very, very little. We give the least of ourselves, but it actually takes far more than that. And the question of, do I care, was a big kind of thing to chew on over this last 2 weeks. And today, the thing that I want to talk about as we come to chapter four, the final instalment, is the way in which the things that concern us can cause an inner frustration, can cause an inner disappointment, and that can actually get in the way of our mission. So we're really leaning in to the inward matters that get in the way. I'm going to give an example of this in a completely different story, and it's one of my own stories. It doesn't paint me prettily. I'm just going to say that up front. So if you think I'm wonderful, please don't let me see you gasp under your mask. Number of years ago, I was serving in church, serving in a ministry, and there was just something that was being practiced that was getting under my skin. I had a particular leader. I was serving in a lot of different areas, and I was probably getting a little bit tired. And when you're getting a little bit tired, sometimes there's things that just irk you. And I admit, I completely let this irk fester. Really festered in me. I didn't really realize it was festering. And it got to a point where I was kind of annoyed about this thing, annoyed about the cost personally it was to me, and it kind of got bigger in my head and my heart, that it then wasn't just something that concerned me, it concerned everyone, and this is something we should stop practicing immediately because it's not good for me, it's not good for anyone. And I kind of had a little email spat. I don't know if anyone's done that before. Now on the other side of things, a bit more grown up, I'm realising, gee, why did you do that? That's the most awful thing to do to someone. But I did. I had my little email spat, and I tried to put it as nicely as I could, but I'm pretty sure it was blunt and it was curt. I had in my head a very clear idea of what I wanted to happen next. A very clear idea of how I wanted this leader to respond. And when they came back with their email, I was enraged. They had taken what I had said, and in all honesty, in a very gentle and very calm way, they said, well, I think we can do this and we can do this, but we're going to keep this practice for this reason. And if that's a problem for you, we'll we can do all these things. And I flew off the handle. My mum came in and then, you know, mums, what's wrong, hun? What's beating you? Ah! This person, rah, 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 and I did this, rah, 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 and they, rah, 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 rah. I flew off the handle. I opened up kind of what was really concerning me, what was irking me, the things I kind of kept hidden, that I wasn't really saying out loud, and that I was probably trying to be gentle about and beat around the bush. But because my mum knows me, she gets to hear the real me. So she got the raw force of what I was really angry about. And where I expected her to kind of reassure my rightness in feeling angry, she actually turned around and went, I think you're too angry. And I think you need to forgive this leader. And wouldn't it be nice if I could say, oh, that just sat on me and I went, yeah, you're right. Nope. I redirected all the anger that I had not spoken to a leader onto my mother. And she got the full force. It was no longer a polite, I'm kind of ticked off about this. It was now, how dare you? How dare you say I'm wrong? I am so right about this, and I'm going to tell you how right I am. And how dare you ask me to forgive them because I'm done with you. And I walked off. So angry. Walked off, slammed the door in my room, and just sat there and steamed and stewed. And as I sat there and I steamed there and I stewed, I knew she was right. And that's what I was really ticked off about, was the fact she was right. And I didn't want her to be right, and I didn't want to have to do something about it. This is what our story is about today. This is the chapter that we find ourselves in, that Jonah, now having completed the task, finds that things have not gone his way, and he had a very clear idea about how he wanted things to go. And so he flies off the handle with God. We haven't actually read through the chapter, I realise. That's okay. I will read through it for you because I think it will just give you a better context. So, but Jonah was greatly displeased and he became angry. This is that God has been compassionate to the Ninevites. He prayed to the Lord, "Oh Lord, is this not what I said when I was still at home? That is why I was so quick to flee Tarshish. I knew that you are a gracious and compassionate God, slow to anger and abounding in love, a God who relents from sending calamity. Now, O Lord, take my life, for it is better for me to die than to live." But the Lord replied, "Have you any right to be angry?" Jonah went out and sat down at a place east of the city. There he made himself a shelter, sat in its shade, and waited to see what would happen to the city. I'm actually going to stop there because I could go on with the chapter, but I'm just going to say, you know what, you can read on from there the rest of the chapter because this is actually already enough and what I'm going to concentrate on. So that's all I'm going to read for right now. So this is the place that we find Jonah. He's flown off the handle with God and all of the things that he kept quiet. You know, he makes this statement, "Didn't I say?" No, he didn't. We've got the record. We've got the history. He didn't say anything. God said, "Go," and he went, pfft. Never said a word. It was in here, though. And I think Jonah knew God knew, but he never actually said it. So just a couple of points that I just want to bring out before we even go on. these conversations are good conversations. When we actually come to that point where we do fly off the handle, and in this kind of moment where Jonah flies off the handle with God, it's an honest conversation. And they're hard conversations, but they're good places. Because when we're raw like that, we actually give the person that we have those conversations with insight into us and right to speak. They get to see the real us. So as much as this is a very aggressive blowout temper tantrum between Jonah to God, that honest moment that this is what really ticks me off, God, gives God the ability to speak a core truth into that moment. So straight off the bat, I want to say to you that we actually do want these moments in life, and we want to be participants in them. Whether we are the Jonahs having that moment with God, please, we need to come to those places where we're not being silent carriers of our burdens and our irks and our hurts, but we're actually speaking them out and putting them on the table so that they can be spoken into and there's ability to change. But also, secondly, if we find ourselves the bearers of that brunt, where it's a Jonah on the opposite side, we can take a lesson from God in this place to prepare ourselves to not be offended, to not take it on ourselves when somebody comes with that attack, because it gives us then clarity to speak core truth in the moment, just as God does. So Jonah comes in with this massive attack, this barrage. He goes and really lays into God's character. And it's the best of God's character, the best of him. You're compassionate and you're slow to anger. And these are usually positive things. And Jonah's like, I hate that about you. That is the worst thing about you. How dare you be that? Thrown in his face, the beauty of God thrown back and called ugly. And God just does not react at all. And Jonah goes on. There's this concern for how foolish he is going to look. He kind of makes this statement, you know, if what I said doesn't come true, it's better for me to die. Rather be dead than what I said doesn't happen. So the idea that God has made him foolish is something he's angry about. Just another little dagger. And God doesn't react to any of this, doesn't get offended to any of it. And just that core truth. Do you have a right to be angry? I think you're over angry and you need to forgive that leader. It tells me sometimes we don't like to hear the truth. Sometimes we just don't like to hear the truth. But there is a blessing when we don't run from those truths and we do the hard work of working through them. There's three things that I want to concentrate on today, and they all occur in Jonah 4 verse 5. There are three actions that Jonah takes that I just want to hone in on. The first is that he went. He went to the east side of the city. He made a shelter to sit under, and he waited to see what would happen to the city. So he went, he built, he sat and waited. These are the three actions of Jonah that I'd like to hone in on today. And with them, there's three questions that I want us to ask ourselves that fall into the same category. So the first is, where are you headed? Where are you headed? Jonah has a barney with God, and his action when God reveals the core truth, do you have a right to be angry? And it sits in Jonah, and he knows. He's right. I'm wrong. What's the action? Where's he headed? He turns around and hightails it out of there because we don't like being confronted with the truth. Where are you headed? He went. The Hebrew is Mikadim. And it's talking about the direction in which he goes. So when it talks about he went or he left, that word Mikadim is actually a really obscure word, and the kind of literal translation means the east or the front, or literally in the direction of the rising sun. So when we hear that Jonah left and headed east, it's translated east because it means in the direction of the rising sun, and we know the sun rises in the east. So when he hightails it and he turns to the direction of the rising sun, you can imagine the image is he turns his back on God and casts a shadow on him. He heads into the sun, his back to God, and he actually gives God shade, literally. His physical position mirrors his internal position. Being in the east, it's an elevated portion of the terrain. It provides a better vantage point to see what's going on in the city. It's outside. It's detached. It's removed. It's looking down. It's lofty. It's opposed. Maybe you know someone who's had this kind of reaction. They've seen something in the church they didn't like, and rather than kind of bear through the conflict and hear the truth in the moment and really voice what's really going on, they've walked. Or they've heard the truth and decided, I don't want any of this. And what's amazing is God pursues Jonah. And I was kind of wondering whether or not to say this. I'm going to put it out there and ask you to just kind of discern whether it's right or not. But maybe you actually know somebody who has walked away from here, and it's a temper tantrum. You know it's a temper tantrum, and it's time to pursue, to go out, to check on them, to maybe risk the love and speak truth if you've got that relationship. And if that's the case, I'd also say, like, have a chat with James, have a chat with a leader, to just discern if that's the right thing, to have the blessing to do that, to make sure if they should turn around that you're going to be able to bring them back in without any bad blood and that sort of thing. But maybe you know someone and you actually need to go out to that Jonah heart, like God, and be the speaker of truth for their soul. I'm going to leave that one with you. That might or might not be right, but I'm just going to risk that it might be. The second thing is that Jonah does is he builds. And so I'm going to ask, what are you building? Jonah makes a shelter, and we can go on to the next slide here. The word is sukkan, and it means a booth that is woven together. Now, this is actually quite an amazing thing. This temporary shelter that Jonah weaves together. And the reason why it's amazing is that particular form or type of building was the kind of building that was used during the Festival of Booths, which is a time where the Israelites annually came, made these temporary shelters, lived in them, and remembered the deliverance from Egypt, their time in the wilderness, and that God was with them. And what I find interesting is in the midst of Jonah's very, very angry moment, he actually leans on a tradition. He leans on an old custom. He makes something that he's made heaps of times. It's very significant. It's very symbolic. It's rich in the history and weight and value it has. But it's completely out of place. Completely out of place. It's the wrong thing to build in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I think there's a warning in that. That there is a tendency for us when we're a little bit ticked off, when we don't like the way things are headed, that we might lean back onto a tradition or something familiar that has significance for us, but it's the wrong thing for this place and this time and this people. Sometimes we take the things that are significant to us, but it's the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong heart. And it actually strips it of everything that makes it special. We actually have to be careful about that. This is an example of tradition being used in the wrong place. So we actually have to stop and ask ourselves at times, you know, is the thing that I'm building towards, is the thing I'm constructing, is the thing I'm trying to create in this place right? Is it actually right for us? Is it right for us to be working and investing in this? Or am I actually building the wrong thing? I'll give you an example of this. So I'm a youth leader. I'm now kind of doing like an interim youth pastoring role in our church, and we at one point added like worship into our youth group on a Friday night. So we, you know, had a little bit of like an acoustic session and singing. And our idea was we wanted the kids to go deeper. And I brought up memories of my time in youth group, and not specifically like me in youth group, but like just previous youth groups where kids would be jumping and praising and, you know, almost like, you know, falling over for God kind of thing. And I wanted that for our youth group. And so there was this sense of trying to recreate something. It didn't work. It didn't work. Does that mean worship's bad? No, not at all. Just the wrong thing, the wrong place, the wrong time, the wrong people. And it would be terrible if we had just continued to pursue that and trying to hammer it in and just frustrate ourselves. So we actually ditched it completely. We don't do it at all. And we're better for it. It might work over here, but in our youth group, it doesn't. And we've adopted something else. We still want to go deep. That's the key. We want to go deep, but we recognize this is not the way to do it for us. So the way we do it is through storytelling, through sharing, through time to speak. And it's so important to our kids because there's places they don't get to speak. And they're quiet by nature. So having a spot where we go, the floor is yours, brings out a connection and a community they don't have anywhere else. What are you trying to achieve? Check that what you're building, what you're constructing, what you're creating is right for the direction that you're headed. Just have a check. And if you want to be part of that journey, just check that the things that you're putting in are actually headed in that direction and that you're not just leaning on a tradition or bringing something that was significant and worked over here and thinking that you can recreate it and it's going to work the same. It might not. Build the right thing. Build the right thing. Build the right thing in the right place at the right time for the right people. You don't need to look like the other churches. You need a purpose-fit, purpose-built church for here. And you are the right people for it. Got a bit carried away there. I'd like to suggest that there was something that Jonah could have been building that would have been better than a shelter. over the history of the Old Testament, when miracles like this happen, when there is deliverance, when there is revelation of the Lord in a place, does anyone know what usually gets built? Anyone? Sorry, A? A? Altar. Thank you. Thank you, David Howie. Yes. Oh, if I had one, I would throw it up. Altars. Altars. Places that stand and proclaim an event that has happened to remember. It's a time where sacrifice is made in gratitude. That was the thing to build. That was the thing to build. And the reason to build it is because altars are not just for the moment. They don't just stand for then. They stand for future generations. You think of Jacob in Bethel, and he sleeps and he sees the stairway of heaven and angels going up and down, and he goes, surely God is in this place, and he builds an altar and he sacrifices on it, and it stands for generations as a reminder every time they come and they're thinking, where's God? God is in this place. And every time they walk past, they remember, God is in this place. God is in this place. I might not always see him at work, but God is in this place. Do you know? Do you know God is in this place? Do you know that God is at work? Have you set up some reminders for yourself? You know, come on, I'm just going to say, use that as a reminder if you have to. Make that your little heart altar to go, I see that empty shed over there and I'm anticipating a better future. We're not finished the building yet. We could concentrate on the emptiness, we could concentrate on what's there, or we can imagine what it's going to be, and that's what I want to put my effort into. Am I constructing the right thing? What am I building? What am I building? Last question. What action are you taking? What action are you taking? He went, he built a shelter, wrong thing, wrong place, wrong time. And he sat and waited. The Hebrew here is vayisha, which means to sit down, specifically to judge. So having not gotten his way, having the truth revealed that he didn't want to hear, he turned around, tried to construct the wrong thing and lean on an old tradition that was not fitting, and he decided to take no further action, and he sat down in judgment. This is where we end up. This is where we ultimately end up when we hold to frustration, when we're unwilling to let these things go, when we hold to our disappointment and we're unwilling to let it go. If I kind of had that question from my mum or that insight from my mum saying, you're too angry, you should forgive, and I decided I'm going to hold on to this anger no matter what the cost, this is where I end up. I end up isolated in something I've created that doesn't fit and doesn't last. In judgment, judging everyone around me and actually being judged myself without even realizing it. In fact, Jonah, when he sits in judgment, this is actually repeated in the text. It's actually quite important to note that he did this. The author gives weight to the fact, note he sat, note he sat, note he sat. He waited, he waited. This isn't just some flippant action. Like, this position is important. It's a negative action in this case. And quite often we would talk about sitting and waiting as being quite a positive thing. But here in this place, in this time, it's the wrong thing to do. It's not a positive thing to do. I like the commentary from Kaufman and Blair, and in particular, they draw out the cost of his inactivity, what's being missed out on. And this is what they say. Jonah overlooked the importance of following through. If there was ever a time when the Ninevites needed Jonah, it was immediately after their repentance. Uncounted thousands had turned to the Lord, but they were still as newborn babes without complete knowledge of what turning to God really meant. His sulky departure from the city without addressing himself to the spiritual needs of those new believers was as reprehensible as anything that the prophet ever did. Let me summarize. Right at the point the Ninevites needed the prophet most, he walked away. We know that they needed him to tell them how to repent, but they actually still needed him even after that. They've successfully repented. They have been spared by the Lord, and now they sit in this place of, well, now what? And without direction, where do you think they'll turn? All those little habits are going to slowly creep back in because there's nobody to say, this is now how you live. You stand on the precipice as a church with incredible opportunity and incredible responsibility, I'm not going to lie. While this is being built out here with all these families and all these buildings, you also are builders of a future where God is present in this area. You actually plow kingdom roots deep into this place. So I pray that even if the work is hard, that your hearts will not abandon it, that you'll commit yourself to the future, investing in a future so that in 10, 20, 100 years' time, it will be said of this region, there was a church that brought God to this place. And now this suburb is one for the Lord because they did not give up. It's not just about the here and now, it's about what we build for legacy. Every prayer, imagine that it's like water in the soil. You're not just preparing for what this church is going to be, you're preparing this region for God to be here. You're like gatekeepers. You're so important. I admire you. I really mean that. So I really want your hearts to be ready. I'm going to kind of finish with this. There was a philosopher, theologian, responsible for a lot of systematic theology. You've probably been influenced by him, though you might not realise it. His name's Paul Tillich. And he was a guy, one of the things he came up with was the theory of ultimate concern. And he called this kind of like the essence of religious attitudes, or the kind of the essence of faith, that we are driven by our ultimate concerns. I'll give you a quick quote and explain it in a way I think you can kind of grasp. Says this: man, like every living being, is concerned about many things. Above all, about those which condition his very existence. If a situation or concern claims ultimacy, it demands the total surrender of him who accepts this claim. It demands that all other concerns be sacrificed. How do I put that in a way that doesn't sound so pompous? You're going to be concerned about lots of stuff. Those concerns jostle for your attention. And sometimes there will be concerns that matter more to you. And if you say, yeah, that matters the most to me, then there is a demand that comes with that. It demands that every other concern be sacrificed for the sake of that. And it demands that you give everything for it. We actually see that with Jonah. What matters most to Jonah? It's exactly what God kind of points at. Are you right to be angry? Should this be the biggest thing, Jonah? Jonah may have possibly cared for Nineveh. Let's put it that. Maybe somewhere in the back, he actually did care. Maybe in the back of his mind, he did care about, the task of going through and saying what the word that God has given to him. But those things are inferior to the concern that God just be for Israel. It's inferior to the concern that what he says must happen and that he doesn't look like a fool. And because of that, it gets in the way. So last week I asked, do these people matter to you? But I want to go a step further today and go, you could actually answer yes. You could actually say, yes, they do matter to me. But if there is something that matters more, you will actually sacrifice the concern of the people here to serve that ultimate concern. And what I want to ask you today is your ultimate concern, is the thing that matters most to you the same as what matters most to God? Because I've got to be honest, quite often I feel like I might say the people in my community matter to me, or the kids at my youth group matter to me, or the people in my church matter to me. But do they matter to me as much as they matter to God? And I feel like for myself there's that divide. Like I'm not quite there yet. And so where are the sacrifices? I think sometimes I sacrifice hanging out with people when I should, because they actually, you know, maybe hanging out with my friends is more important to me than hanging out with somebody who needs a friend. And I'm willing to let them be friendless so I can have my way. Is your ultimate concern the same as God's ultimate concern? Because that's what will drive you. My last couple of questions to sum it all up. We've asked, you know, where are you headed? What are you building? What action are you taking? To just put these two questions before you as a point of reflection, I want you to ask yourself, what do I need to give up and what do I need to give towards? Ultimate concern requires total surrender, if you agree, and total sacrifice of other things. It asks us to give towards, it asks us to give up other things. So maybe for us, if we really want to reach this region, there are things we have to give up. There might be comforts in a church service that we have to give up. There might be free time at home that we give up to have a conversation. There may be convenience that we give up and we decide that we'll be interruptible between tasks. But it also calls us to give towards. It's not enough to just give things up. We actually have to give towards. It might call me to maybe sign up and volunteer in a new capacity. even if it's just a little bit. Maybe I can just give a little bit towards this, you know. Maybe I'm not super in love with kids, but I want to give towards this, so I'm going to volunteer once. That's something awesome, something. What am I going to give up? What am I going to give towards? If I go back to thinking about my mum pointing out to me where I was wrong and the truth hurt, and sitting up in my room and realising she was right, I found myself in this position where it was, I didn't want to admit she was right. And the reason why is I knew I would have to give up my gripe. I'd have to lay that to rest. And it would mean accepting that things weren't going to go the way I wanted them to, and to be okay with that. It actually meant that I was going to have to give that up. And I was going to have to give towards, because I was going to have to say sorry. I was going to have to apologize. And I was going to have to repent. And so there was this choice in me, what matters most? Just being right and being angry and being seen to be right. Is that more important to me? Is how I look? Is how I look more important to me? Or do my relationships matter more? And that might mean I look a bit like a fool. But I'll be right with God, and I'll be right with the people around me. For myself, I decided on that day, being right with people, being right in relationship, being right with God was more important than getting my way. So as you're in this season of preparing, you might find that you're questioned on what matters most, and you will have to make a choice. And I pray that you won't be too proud to lay it down. I'm going to pray for you as we close. Dear Lord, I just pray for this church. I pray for these people, that you will encourage them in what you're building. I pray they'll be on board totally. And I pray that if there is anything that stands as a stumbling block that would prevent them from being able to praise you and live for you in total surrender, that you'll remove it. I pray that you will encourage them in the work, that you will send the families here, that you will call them from the far corners so that they know they're not alone. I pray, Lord, that what they create in these days will last. That they're not building just a church, that they're building towards your kingdom in this region. May you encourage them deeply in their heart. And may they just lean in to their vocation. And I just pray this in your name. Amen.